Adventures in Research. In the history of England, in the 18th century, a most amazing thing occurred. Court was in session. The prisoner was brought to the bar. Within 1 week, the Lord Mayor, 3 judges, 8 jurors, 40 clerks and spectators were dead. England called it the Black Assizes, the Court of Death. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Today it is the mysterious story of attacks on windows and how it resulted in the Court of Death. Our story begins some 50 years prior to the Court of Death. The government of England in the year 1696 has convened to discuss a subject which is almost as certain as death.
Taxes?
Of course there shall be taxes, Lord Graham. Naturally, as I've just finished explaining to you, if we are to stop this practice of clipping.
Well, surely this practice has not grown so.
Not grown? Every family in England, I swear, is clipping these coins, cutting some of the metal off the edges, and exchanging the mutilated coins for ones less damaged.
Why, we had a prisoner at Old Bailey last fortnight who has amassed a considerable fortune by clipping the coins.
He was hanged, was he not?
Surely. But there are a dozen more to take his place. And by cutting the coins and exchanging them, we'll amass more money.
I don't see what that has to do with taxes. Let us simply take these shrunken coins and re-coin them.
That's what you would do, is it? More profit for the clippers.
It's an economic problem now. Employers refuse to take clipped coins. A clipped shilling is no longer worth 12 pence. Its buying power is less than half that sum.
Then why not recall these old coins and...
My lord, I have just finished telling you. That is what must be done. Recall all the coins and make new ones with a milled edge that cannot be mutilated or defaced.
And what has that to do with taxes?
Everything, Lord Graham, everything. The clipping process has reduced the supply of metal. The government must have more. And how do we get the money? By the tax.
My Lord Graham, certainly you see that this must be done. Even you must see that.
I despise the taxes. I recall when the hearth tax was instituted. I was against it at the time, you surely recall.
We surely do.
A tax on every fireplace in each house in England. So you arranged for those abominable chimney collectors. Well, chimney collectors that made off with every stick of furniture in the homes.
That's very true. The hearth tax was the most unfortunate idea. But this time, we have a better idea. Instead of taxing fireplaces, we shall tax each house according to the number of its windows.
Windows?
No collectors will have to go inside any house. They will merely count the number of windows. A fixed sum will be assessed for each window and each skylight.
What do you say, Lord Graham?
Do you agree?
A tax on windows, eh? Why, I think so. Sounds admirable. Yes, a window tax.
How the English subjects took to the new tax on windows, you can well imagine. There were murmurings and meetings and a few shouts.
I'm a jailer, and running a jail is right costly these days, what with everything costing more money. And now they want to put a tax on windows. Tax my windows, will they? And who has to pay that tax? Why, me, the jailer. I'll let them send their blasted collector around and see how many windows I've got.
And so to avoid paying the tax, skylights were roofed over and windows bricked in. Great tenements stood with scarcely a single window opening. In some cases, there were none at all. The English poor crowded into rooms where sunlight never came, and the criminals, the bankrupt, for those were the days when debtors went to prison, were crowded into foul, damp cells. And so we arrive at the year 1750, the year of the Court of Death.
Well, it's
to be tomorrow, eh? Yeah?
Going to try, yeah. Have you heard who the judge will be?
Aye, that I have. They're bringing three blighters up from the Western Circuit.
Ah. Well, at least you'll be out of this foul hole.
To Bailey. Maybe even the Lord Mayor himself will be there.
Ayers! Old Bailey Court is now in session. Admit the prisoner to the bar.
The courtroom door is opened, and a blinking, shackled man is led to the bench. The men near the prisoner draw back, for the fetor of the infamous Newgate prison clings to him, to his dirty clothes, which hang in rags. But there is little space to move in, for Jonathan Clark, highwayman, has attracted great attention. The courtroom is filled to overflowing. Even the Lord Mayor of London is in attendance. Sir Thomas Abney, in robe and wig, is presiding and speaks to the prisoner.
Jonathan Clark, how will you be tried?
By God. In my country.
And the trial began. And within a week, the crowd had more to talk of than the fate of Jonathan Clark. For strange and curious things were happening in the court of Old Bailey.
Even the Lord Mayor himself is sick.
Aye, and the three judges, too. They're all down with the fever. And six of the jurymen are dead or dying.
What do you make of it? You think Jonathan Clark's put the curse on them?
I don't know what to make of it. It's a court of death, that's what my woman says.
It is that. All them sick or dying, and Clark himself as hale and strong as ever.
All I say is that it'd take more money than the king himself has to get me to go near Old Bailey.
That's just what I say.
A wise decision. Well, within a few days, the death toll from those in attendance at the trial numbered 52. 40 spectators, 8 jurors, 3 judges, and the Lord Mayor. All had sickened and died of the strange fever.
And I hear they was all sitting on the left side of the courtroom. Every one of them was sitting on Clark's left.
Well, my old woman is saying that not one of the families of all the poor dead are even ailing. Nary a one of them is sick at all. Just those who are in the courtroom.
It's the jail fever, that's what I think. I'd stake me life on it. Imagine the Lord Mayor a-dying of jail fever.
Jail fever? I say it's the smell that did him in. Clark brought the bad air and they'll get right into the courtroom. Me old woman says, her brother says, it's more like ship fever. Now, he was a sailor and he
don't
says that...
tell me. It's jail fever.
I say it's jail fever.
Jail fever or ship fever or camp fever. The sickness that followed Jonathan Clark into the courtroom was the deadly typhus fever. It had smoldered in the slums and on ships and in jails for years. And the window tax, which shut sunlight out of the houses, brought this plague to full force. Typhus sprang up in the tenements and spread to the prisons. Released prisoners were pressed into the Navy to infest the quarters of the ships. And as public opinion began to act, Dr. John Pringle met with Stephen Hales, noted preacher and physiologist.
Dr. Pringle, there seems to me no doubt that the bad air and foul smell killed those people in the courtroom. You and I, sir, as two public-spirited citizens, must take some measures of prevention, or all of London will be following the Lord Mayor to his grave.
Reverend, I've long held a great admiration for you and your work. As a physiologist, your finding a way to measure blood pressure is an astounding feat. And here is my hand on any plan you may devise to rid Newgate of its contamination.
It's not right, Doctor, that men should be shunted into that foul, damp, rotten hole. There should be light and air and windows.
Windows? Reverend, the jailer will not add any windows to Newgate. Of that you may be sure.
No, I suppose not. But there must be some way to ventilate the waste.
Wait now. Look. Why can we not bring fresh air in by pipes into each cell? We can have these air ducts lead to a chimney on the roof.
Yes, yes. And then perhaps a windmill or some such contraption to suck out the bad air. Here, let me show you what I mean. Now, I'll draw a sketch of what can...
Aye, that's what they're doing. Putting a windmill atop of old Nougat. And they say it's pulling all the old bad air right out of the cell.
I heard that when the first draft of air came a-floating out, it killed outright a man on the roof.
Girl, it must have been awful in there.
Aye. And no matter how they say it is now, as for me, I want no part of it.
Oh, don't.
But ventilating Nougat Prison did not stop the spread of typhus fever. In fact, it was not until 1837 that an American physician, William Wood Gerhard, demonstrated the difference between typhus fever and typhoid.
It has long been believed that typhus fever was merely a form of typhoid fever. I believe that they are two separate diseases. Typhoid fever is an infection of the digestive tract, acquired by eating food or drinking water that is contaminated with typhoid bacilli. The prevalence of typhoid fever in any community is an index of the sanitary control over water and food and other civic matters. Typhus fever, on the other hand, is an index of the personal cleanliness of its citizens. For as definitely proven in 1809, typhus fever is spread not by food, nor water, nor by actual contact of the sick with the well. It is caused by a virus and is transmitted by an insect, the body louse.
Therein lies the answer to the mystery of the court of death. The lice that spread the disease live in the seams of clothing, and if it is not washed or hung in the sunlight, but kept instead in damp, dark rooms, the insects thrive amazingly. That is what happened in the black assize of 1750. Jonathan Clark was infested with vermin and infected with typhus. It is only when sunlight and fresh air are let into the rooms and the tidiness of advancing civilizations does away with squalor that the disease dies out. Down through the centuries, typhus has ever followed the armies of war. From the days of the Crusades down to the time of the First World War, typhus defeated every famous general. The medical knowledge that told us how typhus is carried came a scant 5 years before the First World War. It was thus the first European war free from that disease.
Typhus still exists in the world. It will always exist until the war and famine that makes for refugees are no more. Until crowded, filthy prisons and dark, vile slums have given way before the tidiness and cleanliness of a civilization that believes in open windows, fresh air, and sunshine.
For as typhus fever has followed in the footsteps of conquering armies from the Crusades down to the present times, it is appropriate to recall the statement by one of Europe's great warlords.
They say that no one ever wins a war, that there are only losers. But they forget the insects.
And that's today's story by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Join us again next week for another transcribed story by Dr. Thomas on Adventures in Research.